Can everyone hear me okay? You never know in a Presbyterian church. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Good stuff. Okay, let's open in prayer just before we begin our talk. Our gracious God and Heavenly Father, we thank you that on this wonderful evening we can come into a church, Lord, and learn more about your magnificent creation. Lord, we thank you that we can come in and learn more about the magnificent beasts that we call dinosaurs, these missionary lizards, Lord, that we can learn more about and go out and fervently tell the world about, Lord. We can tell them that they are real historical creatures that your word mentions, explains, and gives us a hope, Lord, to look towards the new creation in the future. Lord, I just pray that every person here will understand the words that come out of my mouth, that your spirit will flow through me tonight, and that your name will be glorified. In Jesus' wonderful name, we pray these things. Amen. Okay, if you're under 18, I want you to, even if you're over 18 and you want to do it, you can do it if you want. But if you're under 18, what I want you to do is I want you to look straight at me. I want you to put your mouth out like this. I want you to move your face round. And just like that. And there's a good reason I want you to do that. Number one, because you look very silly. It gives me a bit more confidence when I'm standing up here. And number two, because there are going to be some very long dinosaur names tonight, like Pachycephalosaurus, which if I can't pronounce it, I'm going to point down to someone who's under 18 and ask you to try and pronounce it for me instead. So, our question tonight is, or our theme tonight is Dinosaurs, the Bible, and Science. My name is Phil Robinson, and if you were here last week, you'll know a bit more about me. And if you weren't here last week, I work for an organization called Creation Ministries International. We're worldwide, and we have a website called creation.com. Now, before we begin, what I want to say is we're in a church, and we're going to talk about dinosaurs. So before we get into that talk, I want to ask a very simple question of, why are we going to talk about dinosaurs? And a very simple reason is that I believe dinosaurs are one of the largest obstacles put up by the world to get people to believe in millions of years and evolution. Now, if you don't believe me, please take it from the words of other people who this has actually affected in their own personal lives. The first guy I want to refer to is a guy called Tom Holland. He's not a Christian, but he was certainly brought up in the church. He's a popular author and documentary presenter, and writing for the New Statesman last year in 2016, this is what he wrote about his own upbringing. He said, "When I was a boy, my upbringing as a Christian was forever being weathered by the gale force of my enthusiasms. First, there were dinosaurs. I vividly remember my shock when at Sunday school one day, I opened a children's Bible and found an illustration on its first page of Adam and Eve with a brachiosaur. 6 years old, I but of one thing to my regret, I was rock solid certain. No human being had ever seen a sauropod. That the teacher seemed not to care about this error only compounded my sense of outrage and bewilderment. A faint shadow of doubt for the first time had been brought to darken my Christian faith." This was Tom Holland at 6 years old. He recognized that what the Bible was saying about dinosaurs and what the world was saying about dinosaurs were two very, very different things. And he said that there was a time that for the first time they'd been brought to darken a shadow over his Christian faith. Now, what I want to make sure of is today that anyone leaving here doesn't have any kind of sharp, dark shadow over the Christian faith in relation to dinosaurs. That's basically the aim of my talk. And if you're not a Christian, well, then to kind of bring you around to the way of thinking about dinosaurs in relation to Christianity. The second one I want to highlight is a guy called Don Prothero. Don Prothero is a professor of geology, and he writes basically most of the textbooks for all the geology in different universities in America. And in 2012, I had the opportunity to debate Don Prothero for the BBC on top of a place called Lippin Point in the Grand Canyon. And whenever he was giving us a bit more background to his own story about why he became an evolutionist, he said this to us. He said, "Dinosaurs did it for me, aged four." He said at the age of four, he became a convinced evolutionist because of dinosaurs. Age four. There's no one in the audience here today who's even four. A lot of them are a lot older. So at the age of four, he was a convinced evolutionist because of dinosaurs. So this is why we're here to talk about dinosaurs, because there's a contradiction between what the Bible says about dinosaurs and what the world says about dinosaurs. Now, I'm going to start off by saying I'm not going to be able to answer every single question here tonight about dinosaurs, although I'll try my very best, but we don't have millions of years, we only have an hour or so. So if I don't answer your question tonight, if you go to our website, creation.com, you can find lots and lots of articles about dinosaurs. In fact, there's one on the front page there about Brontosaurus, which I wrote a couple of years ago. If we don't have an article about a specific dinosaur or a question you have, if you write into us, we'll try and do one for you. Just by way of information, we also have a free Infobike newsletter. If you weren't here last week and you'd like to sign up for it this week, John is going to pass around some clipboards now. You just simply put your name and your email address down, and then every sort of 5 or 6 weeks you get an email out with the kind of top creation evolution news stories that we would write about on a monthly basis. If you don't want it, folks, just pass it on around. So back to our talk at hand. Dinosaurs, the Bible, and science. And what I hope to do tonight is equip you to give answers in relation to Christianity and dinosaurs. Now, whenever I was growing up, there was a number of influential TV shows in my life that made me think a certain way about dinosaurs, and a couple of different books that I read as well. And what I had to start off by saying at the very start was the Bible was not one of those influential books that formed my thinking about dinosaurs. There were other things outside of the Bible that formed my thinking of them. The first one I can really remember vividly was in 1988, and it was Denver, the Last Dinosaur. It was about a group of Californian kids. They find this dinosaur egg, and they hatched it like it was a dinosaur, and had to stop these scrupulous men from trying to steal the dinosaur and make money from The next thing I can vividly remember was also 1988, and that was The Land Before Time. I think Land Before Time now actually has 13 movies in its series, but this was the original 1988 version, and there you can see the Littlefoot, the Apatosaurus here, and he had to flee impending disaster and go and find his parents in the Great Valley where he could find safety. Can anyone think of the next big film that influenced me in 1993? It was Jurassic Park. It was indeed Jurassic Park. And of course, you got to see these big creatures in lifelike model size on the big screen. Really, for the first time, you saw them in this kind of presentation. And it was a wonderful example of what dinosaurs looked like and how big they were compared to human beings. But of course, Jurassic Park, there was lots of inaccuracies in Jurassic Park. I'm not sure if you're aware of them all. First of all, you can see the T-Rex there using the Jurassic Park sign. If you know anything about dinosaurs, there were three periods in the evolutionary worldview. There's the Triassic, Jurassic, and Cretaceous. Of course, T-Rex lived in the Cretaceous, not in the Jurassic at all. In fact, most of the dinosaurs featured in the film didn't live in the Jurassic at all. But of course, Jurassic sounds better than Cretaceous, so Jurassic was used for the film. One of the famous dinosaurs in the film Jurassic Park was, of course, Diplodocus. And Diplodocus, they're featured on the screen. There's a very famous scene in the film where Diplodocus attacks a human being. This big massive frill comes out and he spits out some green goo into this guy's face, which begins to burn the guy's face off. Of course, Diplodocus in reality never had the frill and was never able to spit green goo. But of course, it looked good in the film and it was about dinosaurs, so why not put them all together? And that was really my sort of dinosaur journey as I was growing up through my sort of early teen and teen years. You had Denver the Last Dinosaur right through to Jurassic Park there. And of course, everyone's dinosaur journey begins at different points. And although my dinosaur journey was sort of through my early to mid-teens, there are new films out all the time. There's Jurassic World continuing on that series, 2015. And there are children here in the congregation. I'm sure there's lots of children all around Cullybacky and around Northern Ireland who have seen films like this. And this is where their dinosaur journey begins. And their dinosaur journey begins with things in the background that convince them to think a certain way. You see, whenever Jurassic Park came out in 1993, there was a tagline to it. The tagline was very clear. It says there at the bottom, "An adventure 65 million years in the making." And it makes you think about a certain way about dinosaurs. It makes you think two certain things in particular. Number one, the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. And number two, because of that, that means they could never have lived with mankind because they died out 65 million years ago. And no matter who you talk to about dinosaurs, those are two simple facts that are ingrained in the most people's minds. The dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago, and therefore they never lived with mankind. Now, evolutionists believe some weird and wonderful things about dinosaurs and how they died out. In fact, there are between 65 and 100 serious published academic studies on why and how dinosaurs died out. Some of them range to the more extreme, like the caterpillar theory, where caterpillars evolved at the right or wrong time, depending on how you think about it, ate all their food and dinosaurs died out. There's the methane theory. I don't need to go into too much detail about what that entailed, but you can guess from the picture on the screen. And that was a serious one, folks. That wasn't the joke one. But there are lots. There's even the one where they had the wrong kind of sleep pattern and they died because of it. There's lots of different theories as to why dinosaurs died out, but the most popular one that people try and present all the time is the meteor or asteroid theory, where an asteroid or meteor hit the Earth, which caused some kind of extinction event in relation to dinosaurs about 65 million years ago. But when you read what evolutionists actually say about this, they don't really know what went on. This is a guy called Brian Swidick. He's writing for National Geographic, and this was published last year in relation to the asteroid theory. And this is what he said. While the giant impact theory is the most likely weapon in this ancient murder case, we know surprisingly little about how this strike translated into widespread death and destruction. Paleontologists have debated an aspect of the impact's ecological fallout, ranging from blazing wildfires to an impenetrable cloud of debris in the atmosphere. But exactly what happened and how much environmental shocks would have killed some species while sparing others is still up for debate. That's basically a really fancy way of saying if an asteroid or meteor hit the Earth, we have no idea exactly how it killed out the dinosaurs. Because they don't. Even if they do believe an asteroid hit the Earth 65 million years ago, they have no idea how it actually affected the dinosaurs and yet left other things like crocodiles or alligators or all the other animals and plants that were around at the same time, how it left them alive but killed the dinosaurs. Another gentleman, Mr. Jack Horner, who was the dinosaur expert in the Jurassic Park films and a very famous paleontologist, this is what he stated in relation to it. He stated that the meteor or asteroid example or asteroid theory of extinction is a good example of taking an idea too far. He pointed out that just a few taxa or kinds of dinosaurs were living at the end or close to the 65 million year old boundary, and that there's no record of any catastrophic event that correlates with the last of the dinosaurs. This is what the experts actually say when you read them. He went on to say that he readily admitted, "I don't care, I'm just glad they're gone because I want to go out for walks at night." And of course, I can sympathise with that, because after tonight, maybe I have to go out for a walk tonight, somewhere around Cullybacket, and I wouldn't want a T-Rex chasing after me to try and get back to my car. So in relation to this theory of an asteroid or meteor hitting the Earth 65 million years ago, you see it in the news all the time, you see it in BBC documentaries all the time, but really, if it did happen and how it happened and what the fallout of it was, they don't really know. And that's the words of the experts themselves. And of course, some people believe dinosaurs didn't die out at all. Some people believe that dinosaurs simply evolved into birds. This has become a very popular idea over the past sort of 20 or so years. This is a book that I picked up in the British Natural History Museum back in 2002 called Dino Birds, very much promoting that idea. And on page number 3, this is what it says. What do Tyrannosaurus rex and the common robin have in common? More than you might realise. The robin in your garden is a modern dinosaur, albeit a small one. How could it be that such a small, delicate bird could have descended from such a lumbering, meat-eating giant? So some people believe that dinosaurs didn't die out at all, they simply evolved into birds. And of course, as you can see up on the screen there, what dinosaur did they choose yet again to promote this idea of dinosaurs and birds? T-Rex. Whenever you look at Jurassic Park, whenever you look at all the popular stuff that's promoted about dinosaurs, they use T-Rex an awful lot. But of course, if you speak to any proper evolutionist, no one would think that a robin came from a T-Rex. And of course, whoever wrote the book didn't read the book very carefully, because on page 52, we have a fully formed bird, and in evolutionary terms, this is supposed to be 120 to 125 million years old. Now, T-Rex died out 65 million years ago and lived sort of that 66, 65 million year old period. But here we have a bird 60 million years older than T-Rex, already fully formed with feathers flying in the sky. So, of course, T-Rex couldn't have given rise to birds because birds were, in the evolutionary scheme of things there, long before T-Rex ever came on the scene. And in fact, something you don't often see in museums is you don't see the range of birds that actually lived alongside dinosaurs. What they actually find in the same layers as dinosaurs are parrots, penguins, owls, flamingos, ducks, loons, albatrosses, sandpipers, cormorants, and avocets. But you don't find them displayed in the museums because they want to promote a certain line of thinking that dinosaurs may have evolved into birds. And not only do you see that certain line of thinking, but certainly in the most recent sort of 10 to 15 years, you find an awful lot of dinosaurs pictured with feathers as well. This is one that only came out there in December 2016. I wrote an article for our website. The name of the article is on the screen there. Sorry, how many feathers did you find? And this was a dinosaur. It was a type of oviraptor that was found in China in some mudstone. And there you can see sort of the 3D skull there that was found. This is what I said about the unpronounceable names. Does anyone want to have a go at the name there for me? I don't know why they name them so awkwardly, but you can see the name on the screen there. This is this 3D dinosaur that was found. And of course, if you look in the picture to your right, you'll see that this dinosaur is covered in feathers. But do you know how many feathers were found alongside this dinosaur? None. Zip, zero, nada. But because they believe that this type of dinosaur did have feathers on it, they automatically draw this dinosaur with feathers on it. Of course, there were none found. There's no evidence to put any feathers on that dinosaur. But yet, if you go to the Ulster Folk and Transport Museum in Northern Ireland, down in Coltrane there, you'll see this image. You'll see this image of dinosaurs evolving into birds. Now, there's very little text underneath it to explain that how it happened. There's simply a picture of a very famous called Archaeopteryx. There you see the picture of the dinosaur evolving into a bird. But of course, in that display, there's no explanation as to how the scales became feathers, how the bone structure of birds would have changed from dinosaur bones. There's no explanation of how the lungs would have changed from reptilian lungs and the avian lungs. There's no explanation. There's no fine detail. It's simply a series of pictures on a board in front of you. It's basically man's ideas on a page without much flesh there to flesh it out. So this is what they believe about dinosaurs. They died out 65 million years ago because of this asteroid or meteoroid that hit the Earth. And of course, the experts don't exactly agree with that. And then other people believe dinosaurs died out, didn't die out, but simply became birds and evolving into them without much flesh and the bones there as to how that actually would have happened. Now, my dinosaur story continued in the theme of a book. This is a book that was presented to me in 1993. It was a Sunday school gift given to me in the Presbyterian church I attended back then. And the year 1993 was obviously the year of Jurassic Park, so we can understand some of the rationale behind giving out a dinosaur book in that year. Now, inside that dinosaur book, there was a couple of interesting things which didn't match up to the Christian faith that I was growing up in. Whenever you open the cover of the front book, this is what you see. And what you see on that page is really man's ideas, okay? So it's not anything else. It's simply man's ideas on the page. It's someone's worldview. There's no eyewitness there to give you this line of events. It's man's ideas on the page. Now you can see on the top, it starts off with this idea of single-celled evolution. And there you can see it works its way right the way down to the age of dinosaurs, somewhere about here. And then as it works its way down to the bottom of the page, at the very, very end, there you can see mankind having evolved from some kind of ape-like ancestor in the mammalian line. So this was for Sunday School Prize, and as you go on through the book, you can see there it talks about the first forms of life, talking about that first single cell evolving about 3.6 billion years ago. You flick over another couple of pages, and there it has that iconic image that we talked about last week of the ape-like ancestor evolving into modern man. But the most ironic thing about this book was, and I hope you'll see where I'm going in a second, was they put a bookmark inside this book. And on the bookmark, this is what it said. Thank you, Father, for making me. You couldn't make it up sometimes. The irony of it. Here we have a book about evolution, which is all about naturalistic origins of man. Yet inside that book, you have a bookmark thanking God for making us. And that's the irony of these two things. You can't believe them both. Evolutionists, this is how they define it themselves. They say evolutionary ideas provide a set of natural processes that can explain the vast diversity of different species without any appeal to supernatural intervention. They're very, very clear that evolution is all about naturalistic origins. It's not about explaining how God created, it's about explaining how God didn't create and how everything arose without any need for God. So the story of evolution is very clear. It says that 13.7 billion years ago, there was a big bang. The big bang created all time, space, and matter. About 4.6 billion years ago, our own sun and earth were created. About 3.6 billion years ago, the first single cell evolved all by itself. And then through a process of natural selection and evolution, new mutations arising, we came to be sitting in this church in Cullibachy about 3.6 billion years later. The biblical timescale is vastly different. This is why they're incomparable. Here we have a history which begins about 6,000 years ago in the Bible. We have 24 days of creation. We have the fall within sort of a period of a month. We have a flood about 4,500 years ago. And then the Tower of Babel a couple of hundred years after that, which gave rise to the people groups that we have today spread all around the world. So two very different timelines and two very different stories. But the problem with these two histories is that whenever they're presented, one's presented as rational and scientific, and the other is presented as theory and religion. It's like a belief versus religion, or a moral standpoint versus facts. And all these other sources tell us that the Bible is wrong in what it presents in relation to creation. So what I really want to address is, first, before going into dinosaurs in any more depth, is scientifically, is what the Bible presents about dinosaurs scientifically incorrect? If you were here last week, you'd know that we looked a wee bit at operational science versus origin science. If you weren't here last week, I'm just going to cover it in a couple of seconds. But basically, we talked about the operational science last week being observable, testable, and repeatable. So it was just basically we talked about last week. If I take the fossil T-Rex tooth and drop it from one hand to the other, it's the law of gravity that we're demonstrating, and you can observe it, you can test it and repeat it, and you can manipulate these laws to give us all the wonderful technology we have, whether it be the remote in my hand, the smartphone in my pocket, or the laptop or projector we're using here, or the car that even drove you here today. That's the kind of operational science that we use day in, day out, and we bend to our will to give us all the wonderful technology that we have. But that's not the type of science that deals with dinosaurs. The type of science that deals with dinosaurs is origin science. And if you heard last week, you'd remember that this was about one-off, unobservable events that nobody was there to see in the past. So the paleontologist comes to the bones, they try and make up the bones into some kind of dinosaur and try and give you a story as to how those bones got into the ground, what the bones would look like and what that dinosaur would have been like as well. But of course no one was there in the past, as we discussed last week, no one was there to see it go into the ground, and no one was there to tell you the true history of it. And when we went on that, differing worldviews. And of course, in relation to the dinosaurs that we look at are exactly the same. So this T-Rex tooth in my hand, it's not a real one, it's a cast of a real T-Rex tooth. It wouldn't be a creationist T-Rex tooth, it wouldn't be an evolutionist T-Rex tooth, it's simply a dinosaur tooth. And there you can see on the screen that there are two groups of people looking at this T-Rex skull. The group on your right-hand side, the scientist there, he's holding Charles Darwin's Origin of Species book. And of course, he's there to represent the naturalistic worldview. He's there to represent the worldview that doesn't believe in a God, that doesn't go to looking to God for any answers to anything that we now have in the present that was formed in the past. On the other side, your left-hand side there, we have a guy standing with the Holy Bible in his arms. And of course, that's his worldview. That's where he's starting from. That's where he's coming from. So whenever he looks at that dinosaur fossil, he looks at the fossil and he interprets it through biblical lenses. He interprets it in the way that he looks at a creator God 6,000 years ago, a flood that would have buried these dinosaurs 4,500 years ago, and that's how he interprets that fossil. And of course, if you think about it like this, it's a bit like a jigsaw, and you have to put the pieces together properly. And there's two ways that we do jigsaws in my house. There's my daughter Rebecca's way, and there's my way. And Rebecca, this is how she does it. She doesn't look at the box. She simply looks at the jigsaw, puts the jigsaw pieces together whatever way she wants, and it suits her and it looks great for her, but of course it's not right. And what I tend to do is I look at the box, I look at the picture in front of me, and then I put the jigsaw pieces together correctly so the jigsaw matches up with the box and I can say, yes, it looks correct. And I suppose if you want to think about it like this, Christians are kind of cheating, because we have a God who was there in the beginning, a God who has told us how creation unfolded, a God who has given us a true and accurate account of how history unfolded as well. So whenever we look at the physical things around us that were formed in the past, like that dinosaur tooth, we have a way of interpreting the world around us to give us the correct picture on the box. And if you start with the correct picture, you're going to end up putting the jigsaw pieces together correctly as well. And of course, if you look back at various discoveries of dinosaurs over the years, you'll see that lots of mistakes were made because of lots of false assumptions. One good example is oviraptor. Oviraptor means egg thief in Latin. It was found in 1924 in Mongolia. And whenever they found the first oviraptor, they found it a couple of feet away from a group of eggs. And they thought that these eggs belonged to another dinosaur called Proceratops. And they thought that this dinosaur called oviraptor was coming to steal the eggs and was fossilized in that position. That way it was called egg thief. Of course, in the 1990s, whenever things moved on a bit, they actually found that these oviraptors were actually hovering over the eggs rather than trying to steal the eggs. And they found out that the eggs that was situated originally near in 1924 were, of course, its own eggs. They weren't a Proceratops eggs, they were its own eggs. Although that name still stands of egg thief, although you can see it today, the lovely backbone there running down and the eggs situated underneath the oviraptor as it was breeding over them. So, of course, the book, remember the book I got in 1993, the dinosaur book, even though this was discovered in 1990, in 1993, whenever my book was published, oviraptor was, of course, still stealing eggs. So sometimes whenever you get the kids' books, they don't move on very quickly in relation to the scientific literature. Another famous discovery, or misdiscovery, whatever we're going to put it, was Brontosaurus. Has everyone ever heard of a Brontosaurus before? Yeah. Does everyone know that Brontosaurus never existed? Yeah, Brontosaurus, I'm sorry to tell you, it never existed. When it was found by a guy called Nathaniel Charles Marsh in 1879, he found this wonderful dinosaur, and he named it Brontosaurus excelsius. But in 1903, a guy called Elmer Riggs in Chicago discovered that this much larger dinosaur was actually just a much larger version of a dinosaur which had previously been discovered called Apatosaurus. And of course, in naming terms, the earlier name always overrides the later name, so it was referred to Apatosaurus. But whenever it was built up and put in the museum, the sign that was put beside it was Brontosaurus. And this stuck with a lot of people because it was a massive dinosaur to see in 1905 whenever it was put up. And the name Brontosaurus has sort of stuck throughout history. But of course, Brontosaurus, as you see it on the screen there, never existed for another reason. Because Brontosaurus never existed because the cast that you see there on the screen was put together incorrectly. It was given the wrong head. So it had the body of a Apatosaurus. And the guy who put it together, what he did was he didn't have a head for it. So he found other large heads a few hundred miles away. He put them all together in a composite. So it wasn't a real fossil. He put them all together and he said, this head will do. And he kind of stuck the head on the dinosaur. It belonged to another dinosaur called a Camarasaurus. So a number of years later, they obviously discovered the right head on the body. They've rectified it. And if you go to the Yale Peabody Museum today, you'll see it with the correct kind of head on it, which is a lot slender and slopier, the head of an Apatosaurus rather than that Camarasaurus. So there's lots of mistakes that have been made in dinosaurs whenever they've been put together over the past couple of years. And that's of course because their fossils are largely incomplete and people weren't there in the past to see them whenever they were fossilized. So there's two ways to think about dinosaurs. There is the historical way of believing Genesis is history. And if you put your biblical glasses on, you're going to see them one way. And if you believe that evolution is correct and you believe in naturalism, then you're going to see dinosaurs in a completely different way. So this is basically what evolutionists believe about dinosaurs. They believe that they evolved from an archaeosaur, which is some kind of small lizard-like animal, about 300 million to 230 million years ago. This is what they say about that. They say that paleontologists are equally concerned with puzzling out how these mighty beasts got their start. Who were their ancestors? Tracing the origins of the earliest dinosaurs has been a major challenge for paleontologists because there are no uncontested fossils from their earliest days on Earth. Basically, they don't know where the dinosaurs came from, but they believe they evolved about 230 to 300 million years ago. And they categorically believe that they never lived on Earth with man. They're quite adamant about that. So what is the Bible? Oh, sorry, and they believe that they became extinct 65 million years ago. So what does the Bible, if anything, have to say about dinosaurs? Well, here are our Bible dinosaur facts. The Bible says that they were created on day number 6, along with mankind, about 6,000 years ago. How do we know that? Well, very simply, it's a matter of logical deduction. Dinosaurs are land animals. That's what defines a dinosaur. Rather than like a reptile or a lizard, if you look at a crocodile or a lizard, what happens is their legs come out from their torso and then down like this here. Whereas a dinosaur, their legs come straight down from the torso like that. So that's what defines a dinosaur rather than a reptile. All land animals were created on day number 6, as described in Genesis chapter 1. So if a dinosaur is a land animal, that means that they were created on day number 6, because all land animals were created on day number 6. It's just a matter of logical deduction. And of course, if Adam and Eve were created on day number 6 as well, that means they were created on the same day as Adam and Eve. Genesis 1 goes on to say that everything was originally created vegetarian, so that God said that all green food, all the animals in mankind were to eat green food originally, so that means that everything was created vegetarian. The Bible also says that they were taken onto the ark before Noah's flood, which then logically means they were on the ark, or they on the earth after Noah's flood with mankind as well. Now, sometimes the people, they ask me a question of, well, how do you know that dinosaurs lived long enough to go onto Noah's ark? And there's a very simple answer for that. You see, all the sediments around the world that we find fossils in today, we believe as Christians that most of them were formed at the time of the flood. Most of them are fossil-bearing sediments all around the world, and we find dinosaurs in those. So if dinosaurs were alive at the time of the flood, and they're buried in rock layers all around the world today, that means they were alive at the time of the commandment that God told Noah to take two of every kind of animal onto Noah's ark, which means they would have been on Noah's ark. Once again, it's just a matter of logical deduction. There's a couple of things that we can say about dinosaurs, just in passing. Number one is a wee bit about the design, because dinosaurs have some wonderful design as well, which shows a wonderful mind behind the creation of dinosaurs as well. This bit of study only came out sort of about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it's very, very fascinating. There's another wonderful name there. I wonder if anyone wants to give that one a go as well. You wonder where they come up with these names. Okay, I'm not going to embarrass myself. I might have a go, actually. Spinophosaurus nigerensis. I think that's close enough. Aye. Phil's nodding, so I'll give that. That's the ministerial nod of approval there. So, yeah, okay. So you can see the dinosaur on the screen. And what they found was, this was a study done on this particular dinosaur. You can see it's a long-necked sauropod dinosaur. And they studied these bones here, the cervical vertebrae. You can see a picture of one up here. And there you can see the dorsal vertebrae on your right-hand side. Now, what they found was quite interesting in relation to the design of these dinosaurs. You see, as you grow up, there are two bones. If you look at your spine going down, there's if you look at the dinosaur bone, there's this bone here, which looks like all like one bone, but it's not. It's actually two bones. So what happens is, down their neck, there's a large bone. So if you look at the end on like my fist, you'll see this large bone called the centrum. And above the centrum, you'll see this archway, and it's called the neural arch. And in between those two bones, in between this archway, runs the spinal cord of the dinosaur, with all the nerves going up and down the spinal cord. But this neural arch, whenever it's first formed, and this centrum, they're not attached together. There's a bit of cartilage in between, which becomes bone later on. Now, it's the same in human beings as well. So whenever we grow up, those two bones in our spine aren't connected. By the time you're 6 or 7, they fuse together, they're ossified together, and they become one bone. And that's fine for human beings because we don't grow very, very quickly, and we're not putting an awful lot of pressure on our back as we grow bigger and older. But there you can see the dinosaur on the screen. I mean, they have some massive, massive necks, maybe 14 meters plus long necks. So as they're growing, if those two bones fuse together very, very quickly, it would alter dramatically how those necks would grow, and they wouldn't be supported very well. So what they find was that as the bones grow, they don't ossify, they don't come together very, very quickly, but there's something else going on instead. But whenever they looked at the bones, they found, see, in human beings, whenever those two bones, whenever this neural arch and the centrum, whenever they make contact here and here, it's a very flat surface. And that's because there's not an awful lot of pressure on these two bones. But in dinosaurs, you can imagine having a 14-meter neck, how much pressure is going to be in those bones as they're not fused together yet. So what they found was, whenever they examined the bones, if you look at the zigzag here, this is how those bones are actually connected, like a jigsaw together. And they found that this mechanism increases the surface area, which increases how the pressure is distributed between the bones. So as the bones get bigger quite rapidly, because you can imagine the dinosaurs get quite big quite quickly, they found that this was a way of distributing the pressure a lot more evenly, so that the two bones didn't disconnect as the dinosaurs got very, very big very, very quickly and allowed them to grow at this quite rapid rate until they fused together sort of about the age of 20, whenever they were a lot more mature. So there's some wonderful design features about dinosaurs as well that would have come from a master designer. That's only one that was released there in the past couple of weeks. So we know there's a master designer, but we also know that dinosaurs, even though they were wonderfully designed and they were originally designed to be vegetarian, that they fail as part of the curse. Whenever Adam and Eve were instructed in the Garden of Eden not to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they were given that commandment by God, but warned by God that if they did so, that the world would dramatically change, that there would be a curse introduced and that everything around them would fall, everything would be in bondage to decay. And we know that dinosaurs did, their natures began to change after the fall, and they actually began to eat each other as well. There you can see up on the screen another one, if anyone wants to try and pronounce that one as well. They are more than welcome to it. Does anyone want to give it a go? Anyone who's under 18? I can see it. So a couple of blank looking faces. No? It's Cynocalliopteryx gigas. And there you can see on the screen the picture of this very famous backward pose as it was drowned and buried in the sediment. But inside that dinosaur's stomach, there are two birds. It's interesting if dinosaurs could rise to birds, they could eat birds at the same time. There are two birds inside its stomach, and there's also a shoulder bone of another dinosaur. So we know that after the fall, they did begin to eat each other, that they were part of that curse, that part of that curse world that man was now destined to live in. So we know that, we talked about earlier on about how we knew they were on the ark, but unfortunately, if you go around different churches, this is the kind of ark that you get in different churches and different kids' books. if you go into some Christian bookshops. And of course, that would give rise to some very interesting questions in relation to dinosaurs. And the first question would be is, how are you going to fit the dinosaur onto an ark like that? Because some of these dinosaurs got wild big, and you're not going to fit a big dinosaur like a Spinosaurus there onto a small like an ark. Of course, the image is all wrong, because that's not what Noah's Ark would look like. Noah's Ark was a massive structure. We talked about it in a bit more depth last week. But suffice to say, it was a massive structure, 450 feet long, 45 feet high, 75 feet wide, and split over three decks. And of course, does anyone know what kind of saw you would use to create Noah's Ark? A dinosaur. Of course, that's not biblical, so don't quote me on it. That's just a bit of humour there in the middle. A dinosaur may or may not have been used, who knows. But Noah's Ark was a massive structure. But even with a massive structure, how many dinosaurs did they have to take on? You see, currently there's about 700 different species of dinosaurs. In fact, they reckon that there's a new species of dinosaur named every 10 days currently. So there's hundreds and hundreds of species of dinosaur, and they look for the smallest minute difference in them to name a new dinosaur, obviously because they got lots of funding from finding new dinosaurs. But if you actually study a bit more about dinosaurs, you'll find that there's only between 50 and 55 kinds of dinosaur. And of course, the biblical word kind is a lot broader than our word species. And this is what I mean about different kinds of dinosaurs. This is a bit of work done by a guy called Jack Horner back in 2009, and he looked at three different dinosaurs. You can see them there on the screen. There's Dracorex, Stegimaloch, and then the mature Pachycephalosaurus. And what he noticed about these three different dinosaurs was that they all had these gnarly things, as you can see them there on the screen, on the front of their nose, but yet the back of their skulls and the size of their skulls were dramatically different. So what he did was he cut into the bones of these three different dinosaurs. And whenever he cut into the bones of the three different dinosaurs, he noticed that they were going from new to the mature. So whenever he cut into the Dracorex, he found it was quite an immature dinosaur. Whenever he cut into the bone of Stegimaloch, he found it was something more like a teenager. And whenever he cut into the bone of a mature Pachycephalosaurus, he found it was an adult bone structure inside them. So what he actually found was that the horns in the top of Dracorex, they were reabsorbed into the skull of the Pachycephalosaurus, or the Stegimaloch, and then they were totally absorbed by the time it became Pachycephalosaurus. So what he found was, as the dinosaur aged and grew up and grew older, although when if you look at the bones, if you put them all side by side, they look different, they're actually the same kind of dinosaur. So you wouldn't need to take on three different species of dinosaur, you simply take on one representative of their dinosaur kind. So although you may have 700 different species, you only have very few different kinds. Another study was done with Ceratopsia. There you can see the Ceratopsia, the horned dinosaurs there in front of you on the screen. And this guy, Jack Horner, in 2010, did another study, and he looked at Triceratops. And what he found was Triceratops was not a fully formed animal. Even at 7 tons, which is quite a big animal, it wasn't fully formed. And what he found was the Torosaurus, on the top right-hand side of your screen, was a mature Triceratops. Of course, because Triceratops was named first, that name sticks. But the Triceratops that we know actually got an awful lot bigger and became Torosaurus. Its horns changed shape, and it developed these two massive holes in its neck frill as well. So in relation to the Ceratopsia there on the screen, it's all one biblical kind of dinosaur. So you wouldn't have taken on all these dinosaurs, all 9 or 10 dinosaurs there on the screen in front of you. You would have taken on one representative pair to represent the Ceratopsia. So you're not talking about hundreds of species of dinosaurs, but only 50 to 55 different kinds of dinosaur. And of course, not all dinosaurs are large. There was something like Compsognathus there on the screen in front of you. You can see it's like the size of a turkey. It's not a very big dinosaur at all. So squeezing that under Noah's Ark wouldn't have been any problem whatsoever. The problem's really in relation to the bigger dinosaurs like Diplodocus or Diplodocus, depending on how you want to pronounce it. This is the type of dinosaur, whenever you walk into the British Natural History Museum in London, it's the dinosaur that meets you head on whenever you walk into the Grand Hall there. And there you can see it could grow up to 100 feet long and it could weigh 20 tons in weight. It was a big old dinosaur. And there you can see a child having a bath in one of the footprints of a Diplodocus. But of course, Diplodocus was by no means the biggest dinosaur that has ever been found. If you look on the screen in front of you there, this is what has been found in relation to the sauropod dinosaurs, these very long-necked, long-tailed dinosaurs. And there you can see that there's some massive, massive structures. I mean, there you can see the dorsal vertebrae, the neck bone of a large sauropod dinosaur there, an A. That backbone was 2.7 meters tall. 2.7 meters tall. I mean, bigger than that man standing beside Diplodocus there. Could you imagine a backbone 2.7 meters tall? To think that that dinosaur may have been 100 tons in weight. It would have been a massive, massive dinosaur. So they could have had dinosaurs potentially like that on Noah's Ark as well. But of course, how would you fit a dinosaur like that onto Noah's Ark? Well, of course, no matter how big dinosaurs got, they didn't start off that way. This is a Saltosaurus. Saltosaurus would have grown up to about 40 feet long and had a mass of 7 or 8 tons. But there you can see, if you look carefully at the egg on your right, the egg's not very big. In fact, it used to lay trays of them in sand or dirt. And whenever their babies were born, they were only 15 inches in length. So these dinosaurs may have got very, very big. They started off very, very small. And of course, we know about the size of eggs, that there is a maximum limit to the size of eggs that can be that there can be. On the screen there, there's two eggs. One's a normal size egg, and one is the largest egg that was ever laid. Does anyone know what kind of animal lay that egg? It's a very famous egg. No, but it was a bird. It wasn't, no. It was an elephant bird. An elephant bird laid that egg there. And of course, you can see how big it is. And this is kind of the maximum structure an egg could be. And that's for two reasons. You see, if you get a really, really, really big egg, the egg shell has to increase in thickness to support the weight of the animal inside. And of course, there has to be a maximum limit to it because oxygen has to diffuse into the egg for the animal. And when the animal comes to full maturity, it has to break out as well. So the maximum limit to the size of an egg is roughly the size of an egg on the screen in front of you. So no matter how big the dinosaur would have been, the Diplodocus, the Brachiosaurus, whatever it may have been, it didn't start off that big. We also know a bit more about dinosaurs. We know from studying their bones that we found medullary tissue inside some dinosaur bones, which means that they could have given birth at that stage. So there you can see some dinosaurs on the screen in front of you that they could reproduce as early as at the age of 8 years old. And of course, whenever animals were taken onto Noah's Ark, what was their sole purpose whenever they came off Noah's Ark as well? But to reproduce and fill the earth, of course. So we know that they reproduce at quite a young age, and we also know that dinosaurs, from studying their bones, actually took a growth spurt as well. So whenever they were born, there you can see that Apatosaurus. So the Apatosaurus is one of those long-necked sauropod dinosaurs, and you can see down the bottom of the screen that right up until sort of at the age of 5 or 6, it was relatively small. It didn't grow an awful lot. It then took a massive growth spurt up until the sort of age between 15 and 20. So whenever we're talking about dinosaurs, we're talking about the reproductive age, would have been about 8. So it's about here. So they're not really that big an animal whenever they're being taken on Noah's Ark, because of course their sole purpose, as we said, was to reproduce afterwards. So if we put all this together, what are we trying to say about dinosaurs? Well, whenever dinosaurs went on to Noah's Ark, they didn't look like the one in front of you, this big massive sauropod dinosaur in front of you. We know that dinosaurs started off very small whenever they were born from eggs. We knew they could reproduce fairly early in their, whenever they were quite young. And we also know that they also took growth spurts from at sort of 8, 9, 10 age, right up until their late teens, until they were sort of 20 years old. So whenever dinosaurs were going down the Noah's Ark, we're talking about sort of quite small dinosaurs that Noah would have had no problem housing in the Ark. So something like this here one, with the mother or father dinosaur leaving off the baby dinosaur there. That's what we're talking about. So whenever people ask questions about dinosaurs, they have in their idea the picture of this big, massive dinosaur getting in the Noah's Ark, which of course is totally unrealistic because grandparents, although you're very good at doing certain things, you're not very good at reproducing anymore because you're too old. Sorry to tell you that. But there's no point taking grandparents onto Noah's Ark. You're going to take the young dinosaurs, which could come off and then reproduce. So if that dinosaur is going on the Noah's Ark, what does the Bible say about dinosaurs after Noah's Ark? Well, the Bible actually does specifically talk about an animal called the behemoth in Job chapter 40. Now, Job chapter 40, we would interpret to be a dinosaur. And this is what it says about it. It says, "Look at the behemoth which I made along with you." This is God talking to Job. So this is God talking to a man and saying that I made this animal alongside you. "Which feeds in the grass like an ox. What strength he has in his loins, what power in the muscles of his belly. His tail sways like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are close-knit. His bones are like tubes of bronze. His limbs like rods of iron. And he ranks first among the works of God." So this is talking about the largest animal that God ever created. And unfortunately, if you read some commentators in relation to these verses, they say that the animal it's talking about is an elephant. And of course, if you look at the elephant and the tail of an elephant, it certainly does not sway like a cedar. Even more ridiculously, some people would say it may be a hippopotamus as well. Of course, hippopotamus is not the largest animal God ever created, nor does its tail sway like a cedar. But if you look at the tail on the screen now, that's a tail that sways like a cedar. And this is an animal that would have been the first among the works of God. Of course, that tail belongs something to like an animal like this. These are the bones of a brachiosaurus. And there you can see the bones are like tubes of bronze, his limbs like rods of iron. Or this here bone belongs to a dreadnought Australis, another long-necked sauropod dinosaur. And there you can see it in comparison to a six-foot man. Just how big and how thick those bones would have been. So now if we look at Behemoth in Job chapter 40, we would say that Behemoth is something like a brachiosaurus or one of the larger sauropod dinosaurs. And of course, if you listen very carefully, you would know what the Behemoth ate. Can anyone remember what he put in his mouth, what he digested? He ate grass, that's right, yes. But of course, if you're an evolutionist, you would know that grass didn't evolve until long after the dinosaurs. In fact, it didn't evolve until more than 10 million years after the dinosaurs had died out. Until, behold, they found dinosaur coprolite with 7 different types of grass in it. Of course, up on the screen there says dinosaur coprolite, and a dinosaur coprolite is a fancy word for poo. They found dinosaur poo with 7 different types of grass in it. Now, of course, this was a problem, but guess what they did with the evolutionary age of grass? They simply shifted it back so it was now 70 million years old and didn't evolve until after the dinosaurs had died out. It's great what evolution can do, isn't it? And this is what they said about it at the time. They said, depicting dinosaurs munching on grass was considered by experts to be as foolish as showing prehistoric humans hunting dinosaurs with spears. So all those books that had dinosaurs eating grass or standing in grass for all those years beforehand, they said, were foolish. Because grass hadn't evolved. I wonder what they'll say later on whenever we see our pictures of man hunting dinosaurs as well. Maybe they won't be considered so foolish. If you're interested in those kind of stories, I would recommend taking a look at a Creation magazine. They're sitting on the bookstall out there to your left as you walk out, and it covers these kind of stories and similar quite regularly. So the word Behemoth is used in the Bible, but the word dinosaur specifically is not used in the Bible. So what about all these dinosaurs throughout history? Well, the word dinosaur was only formed in 1841 by a man called Sir Richard Owen. He wrote it down for the first time in 1842. And he named these animals that they were discovering in fossil form from the 1820s onwards. He named a dinosaur, which means a terrible lizard. So what we would say in relation to dinosaurs are that the dinosaurs of history are the dragons of legend. This word dragon, which has existed for almost about 4,000 years, they were what people used to call dinosaurs, or what we now call dinosaurs. And writing about this, a guy called Daniel Cohen, he said that no creature that ever lived looked more like dragons than dinosaurs. The problem is time. As far as we know, all the dinosaurs died out over 70 million years ago. That long ago, there were no people on the earth, so who could remember the dinosaurs? What does he say the problem is? The problem is time. But if you remove that time, is there a problem? Well, no, there's not. And of course, as a biblical creationist, I would say the problem of time doesn't exist. And if you go back to the time just after the flood, you'll find images of dinosaurs right up until almost modern times. This is an image here. It's a jade carving found in China from about 2000 BC. And there you can see the very distinct appearance of what appears to be something like a Centrosaurus dinosaur. You can see the horn in the front, the frill in the back, the limbs coming down from the torso straight down like a dinosaur would look like. And there you can see a modern reconstruction of a Centrosaurus as well. Also found around the same time in China is this possible juvenile Proceratops, also again carved in jade. There you can see the jade carving, the bone structure of Proceratops, and then a modern reconstruction down below. These images that we see carved in the jade look very much like what we would today describe as a dinosaur. One of my favourites is this bronze wine vessel. It was found in China back in 1975, and it's from the 3rd century BC. And as you look at that wine cooler, you can see these long-necked, long-tailed animals, 4 of them on each side, one on each side of the wine cooler, 4 in total. And when you see it down on its side, it looks, you can see the rounded head, the long neck, the legs coming straight down from the torso again, and then the long tail extending out the backwards. Something that looks very much like a sauropod dinosaur. And even if you look at the structure of the head, that nice rounded head, it looks something like today what we would call a Camarasaurus. You can see the nice rounded head, the fossil of one on your right-hand side. And there are lots of images like this all throughout history. This is one from Mesopotamia. This is a cylinder seal from, again, about 4,000 years ago, of long-necked, long-tailed animals doing this kind of necking. And this is what modern-day giraffes would do as well with their necks. They would neck, they would intertwine their necks today. Another one a bit more recent, this is from about 800 years ago in Angkor Wat in Cambodia. And in Angkor Wat, there's a temple called Ta Prohm. And in Ta Prohm, there's this nice column on one of the corners. And up and down the column are a series of animals. And in that series of animals, there's one in particular I want to take a look at. Above it is a water buffalo, beneath it is a swan. And right in the middle of those two animals, we find this animal here. There you can see the very dinosaurian looking animal with its legs again coming straight down from the torso, the plates on its back and the tail extending out the rear. That of course we would say it looks something like a stegosaurus, that's right, something like a modern day stegosaurus. Now stegosaurus is quite interesting for a number of reasons, because whenever it was first found, the finder of stegosaurus didn't actually know it was a dinosaur. He actually thought it was a giant turtle, so he saw all the nice plates and he thought it was the shell of a turtle all broken up. And in fact, whenever you look at some of the original pictures of Stegosaurus on the screen there, you can see it was depicted rather differently because they didn't know what to do with the plates. And they obviously, they thought it stood on its hind legs as well, not realizing it stood on all fours. And they also had this really weird theory that its brain was in its backside. Go figure. But anyway, you can see that they didn't, you wouldn't recognize that picture now as a Stegosaurus, would you? No, but that's what they originally thought a Stegosaurus would look like. I'll come back to that point in a minute and why it's relevant. This is another one that's a wee bit closer. This is Bishop Richard Bell's tomb. He was buried in 1496 in Carlisle Cathedral. If you want to go there, you can go and you can see this for yourself. There's a nice mat sits over the tomb because it's made of brass. You don't want people walking over it. But if you go there, they'll roll it back for you, lift it up. And whenever you go around the tomb, you can see different animals of pigs, cows, eels, fish, dogs, all kind of animals you recognise. But you also see these two animals here on the brass ring. It's of two long-necked, long-tailed animals, once again necking. Here's an enhanced view to show you what it would look like. And they look very much like sauropod dinosaurs. Quite interesting that on the rear of the tail, on your left-hand side here, there's also spikes on the end of the tail, which we call phagomizers. And of course, they represent dinosaurs that we know, something like a Shunosaurus. And this is only 500 years ago depicted in England. Once again, if you're interested in that kind of stuff, our Creation magazine regularly features images and stories like that. The last one I want to show you is this one from about 1,000 years ago in the Amazon. It was just released there last year. This is a picture of something that looks like a sauropod dinosaur with nine hunters standing around it, hunting it with something in a spear-like hunting equipment there. This is about 1,000 years old. And the guy who showed Vance Nelson, who wrote the book, a guy called Professor Guevara, this is what he said about the image. He said, "People do not want to accept another reality. They have come from Spain, England, and Switzerland. They have been uncomfortable because it doesn't fit with their system. They can't see an incredible animal together with man, even more so because it looks like a dinosaur." So people from all around the world have come and viewed this image, and they basically ignore what they see because they don't want to accept that reality. This is a cartoon from Dennis the Menace, and he said, tongue-in-cheek, "If people weren't around when dinosaurs were, then who drew their pictures?" And of course he says it in a very joking way, but he raises a serious point. We have images going back to just after the time of the flood from all around the world. We have descriptions of dinosaurs from every continent except Antarctica, in written form, in pictorial form, lots of different formats. If these animals didn't really live with mankind, how do we have such a vast array of images and pictures and descriptions? It makes an awful lot more sense to say that these dinosaurs did actually live alongside mankind. So let's bring it up to the modern era, and then let's close from there. So the modern era, sort of 1800s onwards, then we begin to find dinosaur bones in fossil forms. But of course, we find dinosaur bones. What we don't find is a nice wee tag beside it saying what kind of dinosaur it is and how old that dinosaur is as well. What we have is the fact, which is the bone in the ground, and then we have the interpretation, which comes depending on what worldview you apply to the dinosaur. And of course, if we were to think about a worldwide flood, we talked about a worldwide flood last week in our talk. We said if there's a worldwide flood, we click our fingers now, what would you expect to find? Billions of dead things laid down in water, buried in rock layers all over the earth. And that's exactly what we find. We find fossils all around the world. We find billions of dead things buried in rock layers, laid down by water all over the earth. And of course, we know that this happened after the time that Adam and Eve were in the Garden of Eden, because God couldn't have had all this death, pain, disease and suffering, millions of years, the fossil record essentially, while he declared the earth was very good. Now, if you got the Belfast Telegraph back in 2009 and you're interested in getting dinosaur books, this was a book that the Belfast Telegraph gave away for free. It was a Disney book about dinosaurs, and this is how they said fossil dinosaurs formed. They said that a dinosaur dies, then its flesh rots away, leaving only the bones. The bones are buried under layers of mud and sand. Mud and sand and bones turn to rock over millions of years, and the rock layers are worn away by wind and rain, exposing the harder fossilized bones. So they clearly say that it takes millions of years for these fossils to form. But of course, fossils don't form that way. And we know this because we actually look at real fossils of real dinosaurs. We know that for a fossil to form, something catastrophic has to happen almost immediately. So we have something like Freddy the Fish here swimming along. Freddy the Fish is covered in sediment with a cementing action very, very quickly, which allows it not to decay or get anything to eat it or get at it. And of course, over days, weeks and months, it's then fossilized into a nice little fossil fish for someone to come and dig up a wee while later on. How do we know that dinosaurs were fossilized like this? Well, as I say, we actually look at dinosaur bones. So this is two dinosaurs here on the screen in front of you. One is a Triceratops to your left. The other one is a Velociraptor on your right. And they were fossilized in this position, found in 1971 in the Mongolian desert. And they were found in this exact position. They were found fighting. And in the mouth of the Triceratops is one of the limbs of the Velociraptor. But I think the Velociraptor personally was going to win this fight, because if you look at its claw, you'll see that this claw here, here, was just in the back of the neck of the Triceratops. So who was going to win? Well, that's a matter of opinion. But whenever Bill Oddie, commenting for the BBC, was speaking about this is what he said. A fight between two dinosaurs frozen in time. Almost all the bones in the animals were intact, in exactly the same position as the attack was taking place. That is astonishing. You just don't find fossils like this, except they did. What are the odds of that? It must be like winning the lottery every week for the rest of your life. So we know that this was a snapshot in time that had to be formed very, very quickly. And of course, if the dinosaurs are fossilized very quickly, that means the rock layer they're encased in was also formed very quickly. And just to give you an idea of what that would look like, this is what the animals in situ fighting would have looked like. But of course, as fascinating as that one is, did you know that the best preserved dinosaur ever was only released 2 weeks ago by National Geographic? It's called a Nodosaur. It was found in Canada in 2011, but it took about 6 years to clean it up, and this is what it would look like. This is what it does look like. It's a 3D fossil dinosaur. This is not altered. This is the way they found it after cleaning. This is a fossil Nodosaur. And it's the best preserved dinosaur that they have ever found. I mean, there you can see it's intricate. There's its eye socket. These are the scales and the horns and the dinosaur. This is what it would look like on your top left. It's a plant-eating dinosaur. And commenting on the dinosaur, one of the paleobiologists said, the dinosaur is so well preserved that it might have been walking around a couple of weeks ago. I've never seen anything like this. And in fact, even on the dinosaurs, the keratin, which is what their scales are made up of, there's original proteins left in this dinosaur, which certainly should not exist after millions of years. So they're able to tell what color the dinosaur was, that nice reddy orange. It's a magnificent dinosaur that was found. And if you look at the dinosaur, this is from a top view. This is what they actually found here. They think the dinosaur was complete whenever it was fossilized, but it's obviously broken up over time. And there you can see on the top right for you, this is its stomach content. So its last meal was actually preserved inside its stomach. So they're hoping to get some samples from it and be able to tell you what it last ate as well. But interestingly for me, and this is probably phenomenal, they actually found the bottom of its foot. They found, if you look here, all the circles. This is the original pad on the bottom of that dinosaur's foot was preserved. It certainly did not take millions of years for this fossil to be formed. In fact, they even say in their own commentary it formed very, very fast. They believe it was a river that caught this dinosaur, brought out the sea, and it was buried very quickly in sediments in the sea. this kind of preservation does not take place over millions of years. It takes place exceptionally quickly. And of course, if you're interested in dinosaurs, you'll have seen these over the past couple of years. This was T-Rex that was found in soft tissue found in a T-Rex femur, a thigh bone, published back in 2005. And they've just been reproducing this work every year. In fact, every couple of months, really. This is another bit of work from the same woman called Mary Schweitzer. This was soft tissue. It was found in a hard resort. It's supposed to be 80 million years old. And inside that, they actually find original proteins, once again, collagen, elastin, and laminin. And here's some more soft tissue she found from a horn of a triceratops as well. Lots and lots and lots of soft tissue coming through. Not even just soft tissue, but she even found dinosaur DNA as well. She found dinosaur DNA. So we have soft tissue, we have dinosaur DNA, we have original proteins, all of which the laws of physics and chemistry tell us cannot be millions of years old. But of course, they don't want to change their mindset in relation to these, so they come up with some weird and wonderful ideas and looking into how these things could have been preserved over millions of years. And not only do we have dinosaur DNA, but we actually have complete cells. This is a guy called Mark Armitage, and he has photographed these in two separate dinosaurs. He's found soft tissue in a triceratops, and he's actually photographed what are called osteocytes. These are bone cells, and this is from a Nanotyrannus. So these are unfossilized, intact osteocytes, full cells, that he's able to photograph with an electron microscope. So let's bring it all to a close, and let's ask the final question. What really happened to the dinosaurs? Well, very simply, from a biblical point of view, these are our 7 days for thinking about dinosaurs. Number one, they were designed by God and created with mankind in the number six. Whenever the curse happened in Genesis chapter 3, they fell as well, so their nature fell and they began to eat each other. A lot of them were fossilized in the deluge at the time of Noah's flood 4,500 years ago. Whenever they came off the ark, God specifically says that there was the dread of man was to fall on every beast. That they then began to decline after the time of flood, whether that be due to disease, people hunting them, people encroaching on their land. There's a whole bunch of reasons dinosaurs became extinct, not just one, which is the strength of the biblical argument. They were then discovered in the early 1800s in the form of fossils, and we can now use them to declare a very strong biblical truth. So whenever we think about dinosaurs and we think about all the witnesses that we've seen so far, whether it be soft tissue or pictures of dinosaurs or complete dinosaur cells, we have to ask ourselves, which history is it more consistent with? Is it more consistent with millions of years, or is it more consistent with a 6,000-year-old time frame and the Bible? And I would have to contend that it would be more consistent with the Bible. So our dinosaurs enable us to be prehistoric preachers. But of course, as a Christian, we don't believe in prehistory. We believe in history because God was there from the beginning and man was there from the beginning as well. But dinosaurs actually point to another truth. Dinosaurs point to design, like I said. They point to a perfect world in which there was no sin. They point to a downfall in which sin and death entered the world. They point to deluge, whenever God judged the world because mankind was so wicked that he had a worldwide flood which wiped mankind off the face of the earth except for Noah and his family. And it leads us to declare the true history of the Bible as well. You see, dinosaurs point to a greater truth. They point to the truth of the Bible. The truth of the Bible points us towards God and his son, Jesus. You see, I don't come up here just to give a talk about dinosaurs because I like dinosaurs, although I do like dinosaurs, but that's not my sole purpose of coming here tonight. My sole purpose is to say that the Bible's history is true and accurate from the very first verse. And that Bible's history also tells me about Jesus Christ who came to die for my sins. And Lord knows I am a sinner. I could take another hour to tell you about all my sin, but that would be very burdensome for you. But let me just say that I am no doubt a sinner before God, but I am also now saved, redeemed, and clean before God because of the actions of his son on the cross 2,000 years ago, and that I've accepted and repented, accepted Jesus Christ as my Savior and repented of my sin. So if you're here tonight and you're not a Christian and you want to speak to me about dinosaurs, fill your boots, I'll talk to you about dinosaurs all you want, but if you want to speak to me more about Jesus Christ and about how you can know God and his peace, come and speak to me about that as well. So there are some resources there I'd like to take a look at. One is Creation Magazine. I'll tell you more about it in a second. If this is a new subject area for you, the Creation Answers book is very good for answering about 60 of the most common questions that you have in relation to anything to do with evolution, including dinosaurs. There's a kids' comic book there, Dinosaurs and Dragons, if you take a look at it on the way out. And there's also our 7 Days bookmark. If you just want one of these, come up and see me and I'll give you one for free. And we also have a free poster for you as well. There's one there per family. If you're interested, you can come up and see me and get one of these free posters and take it away with you and put it in your study or at another church if you belong to another church. But a resource I would like to tell you about is Creation Magazine. It comes out 4 times a year. It's full colour, no advertisements, and it really brings home all the kind of stuff I've tried to tell you about here today. So every edition will have something about dinosaurs. It will have something about some area of creation evolution, some area of theology as well, that will try and teach you and your family in relation to this very vast subject matter. This is an article I wrote for Creation Magazine a while ago, last year, on dragons and Noah's Ark. This is a tapestry from Poland in the 1500s. And it's very interesting because this tapestry had Noah's Ark. It had animals going on and coming off Noah's Ark. And if you can see it just about from where you are, they actually drew dragons coming off Noah's Ark and dragons going on to Noah's Ark. Now, of course, by that stage, dragons, they had sort of a bit more mythology about them due to the passage of time. But the artist, trying to be true to the biblical story, drew these dragons going on and coming off Noah's Ark, just as today we have a bit more knowledge and we would draw our dinosaurs going on and off Noah's Ark. If you're interested on that in Creation Magazine, John is just going to pass around some clipboards. If you want to put down your name, it's £14 a year or £39 for three. If not, simply just pass it on. There's also a book and DVD out there called Dragons or Dinosaurs. I would highly recommend it. Or there's a much bigger book called Untold Secrets of Planet Earth, Dire Dragons. It's more like a coffee book table, but it has some of the most exquisite pictures of dragons and dinosaurs through history that I've ever seen. So I'm going to pass back over to Ivor. It is Ivor, isn't it? If I remember that correctly. And I'll take any questions you have about dinosaurs or anything else you want to ask me about from the front.